Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
John Batchelor with James Scott. His new book is Black Snow, Curtis LeMay, The Firebombing of Tokyo, and The Road to the Atomic Bomb. Around midnight, March 9th, 10th, 1945, the poorest parts of Japan are asleep. Families are huddled together. At one point, James gives us pictures of families sleeping across five people on the second floor or the first floor of their very modest paper and wood-built homes, all crowded together. James, you introduce us to survivors who tell the story. One particular survivor is compelling because she's looking forward to her sixth birthday. Shizuko Nishio, when did she first learn that the bombers were something different? We're not coming tonight, and then we're something different.
So she goes to bed that night and she's super excited. Her father, she lives in the district that's being targeted. Her father's a physician who treats a lot of the, it's kind of a working class district, treats a lot of the folks there. There's huge shortages in Japan at this point because the American submarine effort has really robbed the ability of Japan to import things. And so she's super excited for her birthday because her mother has been able to sort of cobble together enough stuff to make sort of a birthday feast for her. And so she goes to bed that night, super excited to wake up the next morning. And like so many others in Tokyo, of course, a little past midnight when the raid begins, her father comes in and says, you got to get up. And so they go into the family bomb shelter. And Japan had actually finally instructed its residents to build these sort of home shelters. And the reality was they didn't provide any money or really institutional knowledge for people on how to build them. So most families built what amounted to a foxhole in their yard. And these foxholes are really small. I mean, so you could just kind of climb down in there. And her father very quickly realizes that there's going to be no protection from a storm, from a firestorm, and from a raid like this in such a primitive shelter, and that they need to get out of that shelter and get to a larger structure. And what Japan had done is they designated a handful of concrete and rebar structures like schools, train stations, things like that as communal shelters. And so her father tells her, because he has to go work. I mean, most of the men have to go help put out fires and go to rescue stations. But he tells his wife and daughter, you guys need to get to a communal shelter. And so they end up in a junior high school basement with a bunch of other neighbors down there to wait out this raid.
Yes, the bombers now are not coming in formation. They're coming in at different altitudes, the three groups, over hundreds of miles. So they're all arriving at different times. You have the very precise time of when the first bomb dropped. What is it, 1208, 1207, somewhere?
Yeah, it drops at 1207. It hits the ground at 1208.
Right. And that is not especially fresh information. They're bombing a part of the city where there's no major manufacturing. There's home shops, but no major manufacturing. But I picture the bombers coming in at a very low altitude and disgorging, what is it, every 50 feet, every 100 feet, they space out the strikes of the napalm.
Yeah, exactly. So what it is, they set these settings that when the things blow out, like the bombs fall, they're designed to fall approximately every 50 feet. So that way you create a density of fire. And the idea, of course, being that these bombs are designed to do is they puncture the roof of a house. So they go, they can puncture through the clay roof tiles or the metal, and they get inside the building, and then the tail blows out and sprays flaming napalm all over. And it can spray up to a few hundred feet on walls, on furniture, on floors, to sort of create the fires inside of the structures, because these areas of Tokyo are essentially a wood pile. And the idea is that you need to get fire inside, just like you would if you're building a fire in your backyard. You know, you create a little teepee out of logs, you get the fire up underneath, and then it burns from the inside out. And that is essentially what they're replicating here in the city. And so they're using Japan's architecture against them.
James provides the horror from the point of view of survivors. So we've mentioned Shizuko Nishio. We also have Koyo Ishikawa, the photographer. I'll mention him in a moment. Haruyo Wada, and one more now historian, Katsumoto Saotomi, who becomes an historian of the firebombing of Tokyo. We're not emphasizing the horror because it's horrible. It's hard to tell. But I do want to emphasize right now what's going on the ground has never been seen before in Tokyo. This is all new to them. Is that right, James? This isn't worse than last night. This is a phenomenon that they don't know which way to run and where is safety.
Exactly. And that's the thing is, you have this huge 12 square mile target area, and LeMay had set four aiming points inside that target area. And he'd sort of done them in the idea being that you could create fires that eventually would burn that entire district. And so, and of course it burns beyond that. It goes, and the fire ultimately burns 16 square miles of Tokyo that night, as it spills outside of the original intended incendiary zone. So the residents don't know what to do. I mean, they residents initially, those who sought shelter in these primitive home bunkers, largely all died because it's too hot, and you had no real protection. Some folks fled toward open spaces. There are just a handful of parks and places like that. Of course, when the air gets so hot like that and it's raining down sparks everywhere, the dead grass, winter grass ignites, people's clothing ignite, their hair spontaneously ignites. And of course, so there's no real safety there. Lastly, a lot of residents sought shelter in a handful of these concrete structures, schools, government buildings, train stations. These did initially provide safety. But what happened is, as the fires closed in on these structures and as the ambient heat outside soared, the glass in the windows and in the doors began to melt. And when the glass melted out, it allowed this rush of hot air and all these sparks to penetrate inside these buildings. And so you had hundreds of people gathered, for instance, in an auditorium. All that hot air and sparks rush in there. People's clothing ignites, their hair ignites. The inside hallways and chimneys of these buildings begin to function like chimneys, funneling the superheated air, these sparks, these toxic gases. And of course, at that point, the firestorm moves from the outside to the inside, and many of these people perish.
The grown-up who it provides information is Ishikawa. He's a photographer. He's a war-experienced photographer. He's been called before to take pictures of the destruction of the bombing. He makes his way to the Ryogoku Bridge and the police station there. He falls to the ground and crawls. The image he provides you, James, is a wave of fire coming at him, like a surf wave.
And that's exactly what it is. Eventually, these fires meld into one big firestorm that spreads across four districts. And at this point, there's all this wind blowing in off of the sea at this point, too. And so it pushes this fire. And what you essentially have is a tidal wave of fire moving leeward across the city. In fact, one of the residents, like Ishikawa, says, look, you looked up at this phenomenon and it was like a wave crest approaching from the ocean. And so, you literally have just a tidal wave of fire moving across there. And Koyo Ishikawa is a fascinating character in that, he is the police photographer whose job is to document bomb damage. And he begins with the Doolittle raid in April of 1942. And of course, there's this huge 900-day lull between the Doolittle raid and then the air campaign beginning again. But as soon as the first raids under Hansel begin, he gets this assignment. So every time there's a raid, he rushes to the scene of the raid, captures these photographs. And of course, when this raid happens, he runs right out into this firestorm to be doing his job.
Meantime, in Guam. Black Snow is the book. James Scott is the author. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.